Welcome to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. If you are looking to make a difference to your work life as well as your personal life, this program is for you. We'll have stories, identify tools and techniques to help you in your everyday success, and answer your questions and hear your ideas. Now, here is your host, Kimberly Stewart.
Welcome, Voice America listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. And today, we are talking about supporting your local farmer, and you're going to meet Farmer Forrest Pritchard. He's actually my local farmer. And many of you are probably going, okay, I'm listening to Voice America Business Channel. What does farming have to do with that? Some of you, though, I think, know exactly what it has to do with the business channel. Farming is a business, and local farming is just as much a business as any of the other companies out there. And we will learn Forrest Pritchard's journey to saving his family farm, saving the family business, and also supporting local farmers markets, advocating for local, sustainable, seasonal food, and making sure that we always are taking care of the local farmers, as well as making sure that we take out any non-value-added transactions between getting the food from the farm to getting it onto your dinner table. So let me welcome Forrest Pritchard. Let me tell you a little bit about his background, his journey, and then we'll get right into it and learn more from him. So Forrest Pritchard is a professional farmer and writer holding degrees in English and geology from the College of William and Mary. His farm, Smith Meadows, has one of the first grass-finished farms in the country and has sold at leading farmers markets in Washington, D.C. for over 15 years. His book, Gaining Ground, A Story of Farmers Markets, Local Food, and Saving the Family Farm, was named a top 10 read by Publishers Weekly, The Washington Post, and NPR's The Splendid Table. Forrest is currently at work on a second book slated for release in June 2015 by the Lions Press. Welcome, Forrest. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
My pleasure, Kim. Delighted to be on the show.
Wonderful. So why don't you just start us right off and tell us about Smith Meadow Farm, which is your farm. Talk about, I know that it has many things. It's not just farms. There's a storefront and there's a bed and breakfast. So why don't you just tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, we're coming out of, everybody knows what a hard winter we're all coming out of and enjoying the spring. And I was almost late to your show because I'm doing chores and getting my chickens ready for spring and all this stuff. So we are a real working farm. I'm a seventh generation farmer. So the land has been in my family for almost 200 years.
Wow.
We farm about 500 acres and, we're right up here in the northern tip of Virginia, kind of where it abuts, West Virginia. And we are a diversified farm. That is to say, we don't just, grow food and put it on the back of a truck and send it down the road, which, might sound a little impersonal, but that's, you know, actually how almost all of our food gets to us currently. Over 97% of our food is still based in commodities. So what we do that's very different is we take it to farmers markets. We have, as you mentioned, we have a farm store here on the farm. So we've got a real direct connection to our customers. And you know, that sounds kind of commonsensical, but again, it's much more the exception than the norm in our American food system.
Yep. So, Forrest, you know, I actually, and I know that you and I had talked about the potential of me being able to stop by your farm. I did stop by on Sunday, and
right.
I did experience the storefront. Why don't you tell the listeners how the storefront is a little bit different than what they might expect a farm store to be?
Of course. Yeah, the reason I missed you, of course, is because I was actually at Farmers Market.
Right.
Selling our stuff in Washington, D.C. So because we are busy producing and selling at Farmers Markets, we just can't be everywhere at once. So we basically have an honesty policy at our store, and we didn't invent this. This is just kind of a common sense, you know, community thing where we stock the store with meat, and we've got someone on staff who comes through a couple times a day. They're either doing chores or cleaning eggs or something like that. And as the displays go down, we restock them, and customers can just come in. The lights are always on. It's 24/7. And they're just trusted to make their own purchase. So we've got a little honesty policy box where folks work up their purchases, and they put it.
You there?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I thought I lost you for a second. I'm not here in the country, so my cell signal goes a little funny. But I think we're good.
Yeah.
So we've got a little honesty policy box. People, you know, we're in the 21st century here, so they can leave credit card, and we try to make it as easy as possible. And the best part of all is if you do come during the day, you can drive right down our lane, which is about, you know, 3/4 mile long, see the cattle and sheep, which hopefully you got a glimpse at if they were on the other side of the hill. See the eggs coming in. It's connected to our pasta kitchen. So it's just a real opportunity for people to connect with the farm.
Yes, and we did. So I had, as I had mentioned to you and for the listeners, my daughter was playing soccer out in Berryville where Smith Meadows is. And so we did see the cattle. We did see the sheep. And actually, there was someone in the storefront who worked on the farm. And she said, go check out. You had over 100 baby lambs. So we walked down to the barn and checked those out and took pictures, and we were just amazed by it. So it's quite impressive. And you really do feel the farm vibe and you feel good. We had bought sausage and we actually cooked that up. And I would say every member of my family thought it was the best sausage that they ever had, and I tend to agree with them. So it was wonderful.
Well, I appreciate the feedback, and you know, that's the thing. I mean, it's not just about valuing the view and valuing local and all this stuff. I mean, that's certainly a huge component, but I mean, it's got to taste good when you take it home.
Yep.
I mean, that's the reward. That's the payoff. So it's all going to come together, and hopefully it does.
Yeah, well, my daughter said, oh, it's too bad that they're about an hour away. And I said, no, the whole reason we didn't meet Forrest Pritchard was he's at the farmer markets right in our backyard.
Right.
So he's not an hour away. So we'll be and check you out at the farmer's markets there.
Cool. Look forward to that.
Yeah. So, you know, tell us a little bit about what makes Smith Meadow Farm special compared to your larger, bigger farms that mostly stock the grocery stores. You know, talk about the organic grass-fed and the whole local concept.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, anybody that's listening that's either grown up on a family farm or in the rare case continues to live on a family farm, and as we all know, that's about 1% of the population, so we probably don't get our hopes up, but there's a whole lot of the statistical likelihood of farmers listening is pretty small at this point. But I mean, everybody has passion and love for their family's farm, whether it's, you know, more of a commodity, conventional based farm or the type of farming that I do. The type of farming we do was in response to some real catastrophic, barriers that made it almost impossible for our 20th century farm to continue to be a commodity-based farm going into the 21st century. And that wasn't a matter of us producing quality food and being like, conscientious stewards of the land. It was simply an economic system that did not give us the value for what we were producing. I mean, they're at the end of the year, there just weren't enough nickels and dimes put together to, you know, pay all our expenses. And, you know, that's, you started off the show by saying, what does farming have to do with business? My goodness, farming is such a perfect microcosm for almost any small business. I mean, from bill management to payroll to, you know, all this stuff. It's just, and that's what we were faced with. We were faced with a system that, it was traded, our prices dictated to us by the Chicago Mercantile Board of Exchange. That's just what it gets down to. And we realized we had to seize control. And to, you know, put that in more concrete terms, what we do is we raise our animals. We finish them all on pasture, and we put them on the trailer, take them to the butcher, get them processed, and then we take them to farmers markets. That's very, very different than the way most food is raised. And I'm happy to get into that a little bit if you want me to take the conversation that direction.
Yeah, and I think we will in a little bit. I did want to go into a little bit about your book that you wrote, Gaining Ground. And because when I read it, and it's a fantastic read, I encourage anyone to go out and check it out, and they can get it on Amazon.com. But, you know, in that book, you really do talk about all the factors of the family farm being a business. And that's what right. called me out of going, you know, it absolutely is just like any other family business. It happens to be a farm, but it's just like any other, you know, company, consulting firm, whatever contractor in the DC area. And that's what fascinated me. Quickly, before the break, how did Gaining Ground get started? And we can talk a little bit about it after the break too.
Sure. Yeah. No, it was mostly a response to the success that Michael Pollan had and a few others from a journalistic standpoint, and a lot of other folks that were coming from kind of a business standpoint who gave up business and went back to the farm. I just didn't feel like there was a book out there that explained the story from someone who's been in a family farm their whole life. I felt like, you know, there's an opportunity to tell that story.
Well, great. And we'll get a little bit further into your journey, the book, the business, after this break. So you are listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. We are talking with my local farmer, Forrest Pritchard, and we will see you after this break.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
If you want to know about investing in emerging and frontier markets, or if you have experience in this field but still need to know more, tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. Gavin explores news, current trends, and insights about both categories of investing. His guest experts, along with his own knowledge, will help you stay above the line when it comes to growth potential, whether in funds or equities. He will look at what to invest in and avoid. Tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Thank you for coming back. You're listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and we are talking with farmer Forrest Pritchard about his Saving the Family Farm. So let's talk a little bit, Forrest, about sort of your journey. What are one or two experiences that you had that have defined who you are today?
Well, I think, you know, being a kid growing up on the farm here on the edge of Virginia, West Virginia, I had a really, really, very normal American experience. I mean, we're a country built on an agrarian heritage, and it was very much my grandfather and my mom and my dad kind of running things, and so I felt a very generational connection But, you know, getting back to like the farm being an actual business, the thing is you get passed on the sense of stewardship and propriety and all these things, but you get to see the other side of it. You get to see like the sitting around the family dinner table and struggling over the bills and trying to figure out, you know, if this year's crop is going to cover your expenses. And it's all very tangible. And you know, as a kid, it can be pretty intimidating. But at the same time, I mean, these are really common. It's common American experience, especially in the 20th century, as so many, you know, just hundreds of thousands, if not into millions of families that had to deal with all these things. So, I mean, I feel blessed to have had a very American experience, and also to kind of, you know, have Washington, D.C., not in my backyard per se, but close enough to kind of transform our farm. So, you know, the big thing that I think kind of defined me was this cultural resonance, this family resonance, this connection to the land that I just feel so deeply rooted to, that just needed, you know, it needed a bigger fan base. It needed an appreciative audience to be valued. And that's what we found by going to farmers markets starting in the late 1990s.
Well, that's great. And it's definitely one where now, and I'm not sure, I don't believe it's always been that way, but now you really do see more and more of the farmer markets that are year-round, which,
right.
You know, what I remember was growing up is the rare one or two farmer markets. It was, oh, look, there's actually, oh, that's a farmer's market growing up in the D.C. area. But now you really do have a lot of farmer's markets that are year-round.
Yeah, Kim, I mean, this is a testament to, like, the innovation of our producers, you know, in the form of hoop houses and cold storage for vegetable and fruit farmers. And for me, like, you know, the technology of having vacuum packing and blast freezers and all this stuff, it's really an intersection of where, you know, the artistry intersects with science.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an incredible time to be a producer, to be able to have, all these real advances in being able to start the season earlier, keep it longer and to be able to preserve, the food at a really high quality, whether it's fresh or in my case, it's frozen and vacuum packed.
Right.
So it does lend itself to the opportunity to have year-round farmers markets at this point.
Right, which is fantastic. I know that I thoroughly enjoy taking advantage of that. You know,
sure.
You've talked about some of the challenges that you've experienced over the course of, you know, you working your family farm and getting it to where it is today. What has been the most challenging part of running the farm, and what did you learn or realize from that experience?
Yeah, I'd say the value of failure as a teaching mechanism. You know, valuing it's just so hard to. It's such a hard lesson to learn because we're constantly taught that we shouldn't fail, and that starts like in kindergarten. I mean, you get an F, right?
Yep.
In kindergarten,
right.
That's like the worst thing. And then you turn on the TV, and it's like a, you know, a football game, and somebody's got to lose, and the losers are the ones walking off with their heads hung down, you know.
Yep.
And it just goes on and on. And in business, it's so important to have, you know, not catastrophic failures, not things that will completely cut the wind out of you, but these little things that say, oh, you know, ego check, it's a constitution check, it's a like a temerity check, all
right.
These things that really test our core, not only as from, you know, from kind of the proprietorship as an owner or a CEO or however you want to couch yourself as a small business owner, but from a farming standpoint, it's a very mm-hmm. physical business. Mother Nature, we are, you know, I can't overstate, it sounds cliche, but we're completely at the mercy of things way beyond what other businesses might have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Yeah. And it really, I think, for you, puts in the creative problem solving that I know every business person understands, that you're thinking of plan A, B, and C. And I think in your case, you're thinking of all those plans given the various situations, and you have to have some creativity in how you're going to solve those situations, because it's not necessarily just add more resources to it, because it might be, as you said, a Mother Nature issue that you have to deal with.
Exactly. I mean, from a you know, budgetary standpoint, there is never enough money you can put in a farm. Okay.
Right.
There is always a way to, you know, and it's a way, it's easy to be able to justify these expenses. You know, you say, oh, we're going to come up with a greater efficiency. Like the old saying is, like, a boat is a hole in the water that you pour money into.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a farm is a money pit too. There's no getting around it. And when you have to deal with unexpected contingencies in the form of weather disasters, or as a livestock, even, you know, as a vegetable farmer, you deal with unexpected mortality, unexpected crop failures, drought, you know, fluctuations. We rely on farmers markets every weekend, but what happens when you get a snowstorm for two weekends in a row? You know, my cash flow gets completely pinched.
Right.
So there's just all these externalities that are, you know, just impossible to control.
Yep, absolutely. And we had quite a few of those snowstorms, and they always seem to happen right around the Sunday time frame.
That's good. Yeah. Funny
how that works. Yeah, it is. So, you know, you talk about how this in the book, and actually, and this evening, that, you know, this is really a family all in business, or at least that's what it seems like. How do you balance your family and business, and is there a separation, and how do you make that separation, if there is one?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, everybody on the farm is just completely bought into the, you know, it's not a concept, it's not a mission statement, it's a reality that part of our paycheck is a reward in lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's only so much margin we're going to make on a pound of ground beef. People are only they're only going to pay so much, no matter how you know, organic, grass fed, authentic that product is. There's a certain point where we can only charge so much, and on a farm, after all the you know, the things that we have to deal with that we already talked about, our margins can be pretty modest. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, 10% margins on a farm is that's a fine and dandy year right there. So, you know, knowing that the likelihood of us making 20, 30, 50%, you know, we're not buying in a bottle of whiskey and selling it for $6 a shot or something, you know,
right.
You have to surrender to the fact that, like, look, we need to appreciate, we've got no commute. We've got beautiful views. We've got fresh air. We don't have to have a gym membership because we get all the exercise that we want. We grow our own food, you know. And those are kind of things that you have to kind of step back every once in a while, as a family standpoint, be like, okay, we're doing okay. Everything's
right.
All right. Maybe, you know, we're not going to be millionaires here, but there's more important things than money in life. So
right, absolutely. So, you know, you found your calling after graduating from William and Mary. You know, based on that, and based on what you did and the decision-making process that you did for deciding to go and be a farmer and save the farm and follow your passion, really, what advice do you have for other young adults who might be just starting off on their career or trying to find what career to choose?
Yeah, I mean, take an apprenticeship, take an internship, find out what you think interests you, and participate with a master. That's not to imply that I'm a master. we do offer an apprenticeship well, and but that is to say, there are masters out there that want to tutor. I think, like, so much in our culture, we want to skip steps. We want to take shortcuts. You know, we want to, you know, we just want to go from 0 to 60. And, you know, that's, life has never worked that way for me. I can't speak for others.
Right.
But on our farm, it's been a very slow trajectory towards the positive, with many, many setbacks along the way. So, yeah, if you're a young person starting out, be patient. Take some breaths. Have fun. Pursue things that interest you. And you know, Bob Dylan once said, if you want to learn anything, you sit up close to the teacher. Right? You sit in the back of your class. You move up close. And find out what these other wiser, more experienced people have learned. And don't, you know, expect to not learn anything from them for about 6 months until they trust you.
And, right.
You know, find out that you're worth giving a lesson to.
Yeah. Well, I think that is great advice. So it is time for another break. So you're listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and we will be right back after this break and continue our conversation with Forrest Pritchard.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Are the challenges of economic uncertainty and the pressures of global competition wreaking havoc on your company strategy? To succeed in today's fast-paced, high-tech business landscape, companies must continually adapt while driving innovation and exploiting new opportunities. Listen for Quantum Business Insights with host Olivia Parr Rood. Our guests will include thought leaders from around the world discussing and exploring the concepts that will move companies forward in these uncertain times. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Thank you for coming back. You're listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and I have farmer Forrest Pritchard on with me. We are learning about his journey of saving his family farm. We are learning about local and sustainable farming and grass-fed farming, and we are learning a little bit about his book, Gaining Ground, which you can purchase on Amazon.com. So, Forrest, you know, there's one question, or there's actually three questions, but I want to ask you one of those three questions I ask every guest. How do you define success? And the other part will be, have you achieved it?
Right. Well, that's a great question to ask everybody, because I anticipate that everybody's going to give a different response. For farming, you know, there's never a year that's identical. You don't just you fire up 2014 and expect it to be like 2013. That won't happen. So success for us, I always get such a chuckle. Like every 4 years during the political, and you know, we're in a very political city here in Washington D.C. When it always gets into like a shouting match about small business, who, you know, which party is better for small business and all this stuff. And I just want to raise my hand up and be like, we're small business, you know. Kind of, I've got two thumbs, and they're pointed.
Right.
You know, we've grown from a family farm, which is still a family farm, to having an income that supports four family members and ten full time employees.
Wow.
And you know, that's not a huge accomplishment, but I feel very patriotic about that. We don't take any subsidies. We generate enough revenue through farmers markets and a handful of restaurant sales in our farm store to, you know, support a great crew. And it takes me back to when Thomas Jefferson answered his census after he had been president, you know, in the late 18 teens is what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
After he finished his presidency, and instead of putting ex-president or, you know, any of these things, he wrote farmer on his census. And I think that just kind of is a thread of patriotism that connotes success to me. If at the end of the year I can say I'm a farmer, that I'm still in business, I'm still paying my crew who's so loyal, we're still putting food on the table, you know, at the end of the day, who could ask for more success than that?
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's a great definition of success. And you are right. It is. I love the question because everyone has a different, slightly different answer. I shouldn't say a drastically different answer, but usually it's slightly variations of it. And what's important, what I take out of that question and the responses I get is that, you know, the definition of success is very personal, and it should be, you know, and you should be proud of what you've done. If you feel you've achieved success, then good for you and keep on doing it. So
yeah, and it's contagious is the best part of it.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, we talked about, you wrote the book Gaining Ground. What impact has that book had on your business? Have you noticed an impact from it?
Well, that's a great question. Honestly, I originally thought about writing it, under a pen name, because I didn't want it to. And, you know, from a sustainable farming standpoint, this might sound really crazy to your listeners who are oriented towards more mainstream business. From a sustainability on a farm implies that the farm can produce what it's capable of producing, you know, within its own kind of metrics. And I didn't want to be a guy who like wrote something just to kind of falsely build demand for a product that might not be there. Mm-hmm. So there was a big temptation for me to kind of back off and kind of write it from an anonymous standpoint. And then I asked a couple of my peers who had also written business books and things of that nature how greatly it had impacted their business going forward. And, you know, to varying degrees, everybody told me, the feedback is more from a readership, from a kind of an objectivity standpoint, more than a bottom line, to the business. And that's certainly been my experience. I mean, it's nice to get feedback at farmers markets and have customers who have been loyal for 10, 15 years saying, you know, we never knew the extent of your story while we were supporting you, and that kind of validates things and makes everybody a little more connected. So that's been the biggest impact I've had.
Yeah. And, you know, from my perspective, I thoroughly enjoyed the read, and I had two folds in terms of reading it. One, it was one of those things where I saw it and it looked interesting, and I was co-chairing a gourmet club that were doing local sustainable seasonal menus. So I'm like, oh, let me pick this up. And it's one of those impromptu buys. But then when I started reading it too, you know, I clicked into the business side of it and looking at all the aspects of the business that, yes, if you sit down and think about it, it makes sense. But I don't typically think that way, but now I do. So I enjoyed reading it. It had lots of different perspectives and value added for me in reading it. I think it has a lot of, you know, it can impact the farm. It can help people in their business, no matter what the business is. It can also educate people on local sustainable produce and grass-fed, you know, beef and meat and all that stuff. So,
And if I could just add to that, I think if I'm not mistaken, you picked up the book at Whole Foods.
I did pick it up at Whole Foods. Yep.
Right, which I think is pretty unusual in and of itself. It kind of lends itself to kind of this breakout of different ways of thinking about business and marketing, that a place like Whole Foods, where you expect to walk in and get produce, is a kind of cross-marketing, a farming story. And I've been very grateful to them, certainly, for doing that. But, it's definitely one of those things that when you think about it, it doesn't really make sense. And then you see it in the story, you're like, oh, okay, that's an okay fit. You know, it's the Barnes & Noble, it's Whole Foods.
Right. Yeah. And you bring up a great point, because I think that part of this, trend and this demand really that consumers have for local is, you see that in the grocery stores, whether Whole Foods kind of, I think, does explode it with their, in at least the Whole Foods that I go to, that's in, not very far away from me. Right. It has huge sections of just local produce. It can be beyond just the farmer's market that you can learn about it and pick up these things. So, one of the things that I did learn about in the book, so I'm going to ask you now, is that Smith Meadows was not always called Smith Meadows. Why did you feel the need to change the name, and how did you come up with Smith Meadows?
Right. Well, I have the clever ability to have come up with probably the most forgettable name. what could be more generic than Smith Meadows? Maybe like Jones Acres or something like that. We've got this. My mom's side of the family, through which the farm was handed, was my grandfather's Robert R. Smith, and the farm historically had been called Smithfield. And not only are there dozens and dozens of Smithfield farms across the country, there also, at the time, happened to be an American-owned company called Smithfield, which just about a year or so ago was bought by Chinese investors, and now is a Chinese-owned company. But it's called Smithfield, and everybody's familiar with Smithfield hams and Smithfield products and all these things. So at the time, we're thinking, okay, we're in Virginia. Smithfield is in Virginia and also North Carolina. We're selling meat. They're selling meat. That's just from a consumer standpoint, even though we had the authenticity to say, like, look at our deed, it goes back to 1816, we're not going to call our farm like Microsoft Farm. It's like banging our head against the wall, right? So we chose to try to come up with something that held on to a little bit of tradition and was more evocative of what we're about. So Smith Meadows was the right fit. That's how it came about.
Great. Okay. One of the things that I don't know how much our listeners know about organic grass-fed farming practices that we've talked a little bit about on the show. Can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly that means and why is it good or positive support?
Yeah, of course. Try to explain it as clearly as possible, because there's a lot of confusion about this stuff. So 97-98% of the beef that is out there is grain fed. Why is that a problem? Well, a couple of things that I would suggest might be a problem. It takes 6 to 7 pounds of grain to make 1 pound of beef. Well, what's the big deal with that? Well, grain is incredibly fossil fuel intensive. It takes fertilizers, tractors, pesticides, herbicides to grow this corn. Then it has to be trucked, often great distances to animals that have also been trucked. And then those animals get fed this grain, and it takes 6 pounds of it to make 1 pound of beef. And before our listeners' ears and eyes glaze over with all these numbers and kind of facts and figures. The big difference of what we do is the cows are raised on grass their whole life. Well, what a concept that is. Don't we think that all cows eat grass? We'd like to think so. Most cow-calf herds in this country start out on pasture, But that's where the story ends. Once the calves get to a certain weight, they get sold off, put on trucks, put on trains, and then sent to feedlots where they get that grain. We don't do that. We keep the animals on our farm, and we finish them as we feel that they were naturally intended to do, as a byproduct of their buffalo and elk and antelope ancestors, cousins. We finished on pasture. So that's what we do instead.
And so hence the grass-finished farm.
Right. And, so that's as opposed to grass-fed and grain-finished. That's as opposed to strictly grain-finished. So we right. use the term grass-finished to connote that these animals were actually finished on pasture.
Great. Well, it is time for one last break. So you are listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and I am talking with farmer Forrest Pritchard. We will see you after this break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. If you've ever wanted to know the inner workings of how auctions work, you'll want to tune in to Ed Spencer's American Auction View. Auctions establish markets and commerce that affect everyone in our country. Whether it's land, real estate, livestock, automobiles, collectibles, or household goods, people are turning auction items into cash in nearly every business market in the world. You can find out more about this unique and engaging industry every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Are you ready for what happens next? If you have your investments, retirement planning, and business plans all in a row, you're probably set. But are you really all that sure? Listen to In Black and Whites with host Peter Whites. Peter and his guests will cover business and investment topics that you need to know about right now. Whether it's new technology, 401k plans, mergers and acquisitions, we're here to help you. In Black and Whites airs live Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Business.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Thank you for coming back. You're listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and we are talking to my local farmer, Forrest Pritchard. So, Forrest, now we get to know a little bit more about you, apart from necessarily, or and maybe not, actually, your farming. We get to know sort of what you do when you're not farming. But before we get to that, one of the things that I'm curious on, if you were not a farmer, what do you think you would do as your career? What would you be?
I think the writing definitely plays into that. As folks have read the book, they come up at Farmer's Market or wherever and they say, the story was good, but my gosh, you're not a bad writer. So that's been really rewarding. And of course I studied English, and English has always been a real passion of mine. What writer doesn't need content? If you're a journalist, you're like chasing content. You're researching. Or if you're a nonfiction writer, you need to pretty much have like lived the content or been an academic. So farming just really just provides so many stories, either from personal experience or, just the things that you just get handed down to you. So it's just the perfect intersection of like content and the ability to write about it.
Yep. And I agree. It's a fabulous read. So I thought you're a great writer, and I'm looking forward to your second book coming out in June of, I guess, next year is what you're targeting. Right. Is that correct?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Now, is that about the farm or is it about something totally different? Can you give us a sneak peek?
Yeah. Quick. Yeah, of course. Yeah, the book is tentatively titled The Face of Our Farms. And basically what I wanted to do is build off the goodwill of gaining ground. And I've identified 18 sustainable farmers all across the country. And I'm talking from Seattle to, Charleston, South Carolina to Cape Cod and all points in between. Demonstrating that sustainable farming isn't trendy. It's not a fad. It's been here. It will continue to be here. It's diverse. It's multi-generational. So I'll be writing their stories. It's going to be photo heavy, and it'll also be sharing the farmers' favorite recipes from what they grow. So I'll have a cookbook angle.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it because I love cooking and I love supporting the local farmer. So, and it sounds like a great story, and it has something for everyone across the country. So that will be great. So, one of the things that I like to find out, because it's not always the same types of people, but often there's some commonality, but who have been the people who have influenced you the most?
Yeah, I've always had an older, influential figure in my life, and I've always been so grateful for that. I don't know if they say like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I feel like there's just been periods in my life where I've needed a teacher and like a really bona fide older person, someone in their 70s, 80s, 90s, has just kind of stepped into my life, not because, they're like, hey, Forrest, I'm your teacher and you'll follow me. They stepped into my life as like my Italian father-in-law, a stonemason that helped us do a lot of construction on the farm, a baker that I met at Farmer's Market. And a lot of these folks were especially important to me because I lost my dad when I was in my 20s. So they were real kind of guideposts for me as I kind of went about trying to become an adult.
Yep. So, I know that, and I believe you live on the farm. Is that correct?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking out my window at cows right now.
Yep. So I can't say, what do you do when you're not on the farm, because you live there. But what do you do when you're not farming? So what do you do in your free time, if there is free time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like any red-blooded American male. I like my college football, and I've been watching some March Madness, and I love to play guitar. Nothing real crazy. Back in college, I was on the fencing team, and believe it or not, out here, in rural Virginia, we've actually got a fencing club. So every once in a while, I'll check into that and get some. That's like it's the best exercise you could ever ask for. It's like boxing in full body armor.
and that would be exercise when you're not on the farm, because I think farming's probably pretty physical and a good exercising.
It is, but I mean, there's no substitute for good cardiovascular exercise.
Right.
I mean, that's good for everybody. It helps. Puts you asleep like nobody's business at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I bet. So I think you mentioned some of those things. Are they the things that you do to unwind and relax at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, farming is so many releases built into it. You got fresh air, you got sunshine. My friends often say, like, hey, you want to go camping on the weekend? Why do I want to go camping? Like, I'm outside all the time. Like, the thought of unrolling my sleeping bag and sleeping on the ground is not an appealing thought to a guy who's been, like, laying on the ground working on under his truck or his tractor, all day long. So I politely decline.
Yeah, right. What are some of the things that you have on your bucket list to do?
Well, this next project is really going to help me with that. Being a farmer, you know, naturally, you have to be very present on the farm. You can't be you can't farm by phone. You
right.
can't email. You can't email your document back to the farm.
Right.
Right.
Nope.
So I've had a lot of deferred travel where you know where my friends and family have periphery family have been travel all around the country and all over the world. I've delayed a lot of that stuff while I've grown the business and I've grown the farm. So this next project is going to it's going to be a working vacation, but I'm going to be able to, as much as it's going to be about sustainable farming, I feel like it's going to be a travel book as well, because I'm going to be seeing the country with fresh eyes, and I think that's going to come through in the writing, which I really look forward to.
Yeah, so there's a whole... many different perspectives to this book, not only the story, the travel perspective, the recipes perspective. So it really sounds like it's going to be jam-packed full of a lot of different things depending on what you want to get out of that book. So I am excited. So, we have about 2 minutes left. What do you do when you have had a bad day?
Well, you know, there's that old saying, a bad day of fishing is better than a good day at the office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really puts things in perspective for me. You know, so many people would love to trade places with a farmer. I'm just really able to value what I do on so many levels. And at the end of the day, I get to, eat the food that I raise or we've got this great underground economy at Farmers Market where we barter for food. So, I eat like a prince, a rustic hermit of a prince, but it's really extraordinary. So it's, on a bad day when we run into some unexpected mortality, the foxes or the coyotes come through and kill some of our animals, or we've got a 2-foot snowstorm. It's easy to get frustrated. It's easy to get physically tired, and that's just when we have to, kind of step back and look around and really value what we're about at the core. So,
We have about 30 seconds left. So, but quickly, what practical advice can you give others to help them be successful every day?
Yeah, don't take it easy on yourself. don't be so hard on yourself. Some days are going to just be extraordinary, and the other days we're just going to slog through. And at the end of the day, if you look yourself in the mirror and you know you're doing good work, that's all anybody can ask for. So
great. We'll leave it on that note. We thank you so much for talking with us, Forrest. I greatly appreciate it. Got some valuable insight, not only on farming, but business and some lessons learned. So thank you so much. And we will see you next week on Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. Have a great week.
Thanks, Kim. My pleasure.
Thanks again for joining us this week for Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. Please join your host, Kimberly Stewart, again next Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. This week, take one more step to find your success.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.